right, folks, welcome back to another edition of the Fourth Official Podcast. It is episode number 18. I'm pretty sure of that.
Are you positive?
Sure this time.
Yes.
You want to triple check your math?
18 is where we're at.
Carry this the two.
The last episode was 17. I said it was 16. Originally, I said it was 17. I was right. Then I second thought and got it wrong. But this time, I'm pretty sure it's 18. I say pretty sure because I'm not 100%.
See, oftentimes in life, when you think something is 18, you want to make sure it is. You don't want to be pretty sure.
Yeah, did you check its
ID? You want to be 100% sure.
Before you went ahead and said this is episode 18?
It's episode 18.
Ooh, didn't sound too sure about that.
It is 100% episode 18 because the last episode I updated.
Told you it was?
I uploaded episode 17 last week. It's episode 18. We're moving on.
Ooh, that's...
Okay,
He seems a little
unsure of himself there.
Oh, my God. You know what? We're going to talk soccer. This is what we're here to do. We're here to talk soccer. So we're going to go and talk soccer.
As opposed to talking about Austin's appearances on How to Catch a Predator or whatever.
No, that's Gavin.
Well, Gavin's the whole reason they created that show. Uncle Gav.
So for those who don't know, and by now you should know, my name is Austin David, here with Kyle Foley.
Hi, Lewis.
Wow.
And Brad Newton.
What? He's listening, and I wanted to be nice and say hi to him.
All right. Well, hi.
I hope you're still saying really dumb things in Slack because I missed that. We had a great time. I say that in a loving way. You just said things that were always...
Listeners, you too can get personalized shout-outs if you go to contribute to our Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah.
Which will exist at some point in the near future.
It will.
If you tweet at the Fourth Official and you want me to give you a random shout-out, it's going to be completely made up, and I will probably make you look bad. So go ahead and do that. By the way, special shout out to Brent's mom, who is still listening all the way from week one. She hasn't figured out how to turn the damn thing off. Brent will not help her. It's been a great time.
So she just gets like updates on her phone that says like, oh, new episode of Fourth Official is
available.
And
it just starts playing. And she's like, I can't escape this. It won't stop playing.
Even if Brent's not here, it's just we are always in her lives.
Always.
Okay, enough of that. We're going to talk some soccer now. Specifically, Orlando. Orlando City, Orlando Pride. We'll start with Orlando City, who played on Sunday in the middle of the afternoon for God knows what reason. 3:30 kickoff. It ended up kicking off at 4, but still, it was like 80-something degrees. The wind was just like... I don't know, 20 miles per hour or something like that. They had a red flag warning for the wind, like a wind advisory. That's how bad the wind was. And it really affected the game. Orlando ended up drawing the match 2-2, but there was a bit of controversy, and I say a bit meaning there's actually a lot of controversy with just about every single goal that was scored.
Except one of the New England goals, which was...
No, there was controversy with that as well.
Oh.
Look, I just got to say, the New England ref-olution played pretty well on Sunday.
Is Pro headquartered in New England?
I don't care where they're headquartered. It was a bad game. Just, damn it, you ruined my joke with facts. I don't know where they're headquartered. Actually, that's a good question.
Someone look that up while I go into more of the New England game. So, quickest start ever for Orlando. 15 seconds in, Julio Baptista, who gets his first start for the Lions, gets dragged down. And by dragged, I mean he got his heel stomped on and goes down for a penalty 15 seconds into the match.
Fastest penalty in MLS history.
Yep. And Kaká, best friends with Julio Baptista.
Didn't go left.
Did not go left. He went straight down the middle. And meanwhile, Bobby Shuttleworth went left because he probably read the scouting report.
Congratulations. You played yourself, Bobby Shuttleworth.
Can we talk about why Kaká didn't go to the left?
Because everyone knows he's going to the left?
I'm just saying. I think there might be something going on there mentally.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, that's the long con. Kaká is Kaiser Soze.
By the way, pro referees are located on Fifth Avenue in New York.
So pretty close to New England.
It's something new.
It's northeast.
Yeah, but that's, if anything, wouldn't they be more inclined to screw over New England in that case?
Yeah. Interesting. They almost did. And we'll get into that. There was controversy on the penalty call 15 seconds in because apparently the ball came up and hit Julio Bautista's arm, which directed the ball towards goal. Then he turned, got his heel stepped on, and went down. It was a penalty, but you really couldn't see the ball hit his arm unless you were watching on replay. And obviously, Baldomero Toledo, the head referee, did not penalty
didn't
given.
Didn't see a lot of things that match.
And we'll get into that as we go along here. So, further on into the match, New England pretty much controlled the entire pace of the game. Orlando had some counterattacks here and there throughout the first half, but nothing really too meaningful, I guess. New England came back and tied the game. 37th minute, Chris Tierney gets across into the box, flicked on header by Gershon Kofi, and Teal Bunbury is left unmarked in the middle of the penalty area and roofs it to tie the game at one. Now, the reason there's controversy in this situation is apparently that Teal Bunbury pushed Tommy Redding away in order to create space for himself.
He did.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely did.
So there's controversy there because that could have been waved off for interference or whatever. So game tied at one, two controversial goals as we move on. Second half, Orlando City comes out a bit more in control. They make a few substitutions. They bring in Kevin Molino, and they bring off Carlos Rivas, which was an interesting move. They also brought on Kyle Larin for Adrian Winter and played Julio Bautista a little bit back, had Kaká on the left-hand side, Molino on the right, and it really opened up the game for the Lions. They really started to kind of work together well, create chances, something that was sorely lacking in the first half. And Adrian Heath, after the game, he really said that the difference between the first and second half was incredible, and they should be playing more like they did the second half than they did the first half.
With the players that they brought on the second half, maybe?
It's possible.
Because that would, you know... bringing in Molino and Larin would sort of signal that, hey, if these guys are healthy, they should be in the starting 11, no?
Yeah, they were being precautionary with Larin because he tweaked his hamstring, and hamstrings are iffy, so yeah. They didn't want to rush him, and that makes sense.
I understand that one, especially seeing as how he's like your cornerstone striker, and
right.
You don't want to risk his long-term future, but, you know, it's not as if Orlando's in a... It's still early in the season. Orlando's third in the table. It's not as if they're in a precarious situation or anything like that.
Right.
But as we all saw last year, points are definitely come at a premium at the end of the season, and you don't want to give up any opportunities to squander any early on. So
that's true. And going back to Molino's point, the impact that he had off the bench who am I thinking of? Adrian Winter was tired. Really kind of turned the game in Orlando's favor. So having him as a kind of a super sub, is beneficial, even if it's the other way around. And Molino's out there for 70 minutes and then Winter comes on. They both have, those bursts of energy and speed and ability to change the game where either one could be used as a super sub.
Their abilities really do complement one another. And you're absolutely right. I do think bringing Winter on to sort of start the pace of the game and have him there to sort of set the tone early on and generate chances is definitely a good move going forward. And then as the game wears on, you could sub him out, bring Molino in. And I mean, you just, if you follow the script of that New England game, it should work 9 times out of 10.
Right. And I think it depends on the situation, what team you're going up against, because if you want a lot of pace and physicality, then you go with Winter. If you want technical ability and vision to be able to see and create chances, then you go with Molina. But luckily, Orlando has this problem that they have two capable players at the same position, something they didn't have last year.
Yeah, it's a lofty problem to have for your team.
Yeah. So let's finish up the kind of recap of this crazy game. Orlando City gets some chances in the late parts of the game. Antonio Nocerino, who, by the way, played
bad.
God awful. I mean, just
he's bad.
Awful.
Turns out,
Kyle,
if you don't.
I knew it. I said from the very beginning I didn't want Nocerino. I didn't think he was a good signing, and now we're seeing it.
Turns out, not playing for 6 months before you sign with a new team isn't usually a good sign.
What? Who would have thought that?
No, but he played for AC Milan.
Oh, he played with Kaká once, so he's going to be perfect. They're going to be a great team. It's stupid. I would have rather have started Mr. Alex Morgan instead.
Servando Carrasco.
Who?
Man has a name.
Come on, Kyle.
A man.
Show some respect.
A man has a name.
I'm sure he has a name, but his wife is Alex Morgan, and I'm pretty sure he's okay with being called Mr. Alex Morgan when he gets to go home to that every night.
Yeah, and her paycheck and all the endorsements.
The fact he makes
a paycheck too.
Yeah, but she's substantially more.
Right.
The endorsement money, because she just signed a new deal with Chobani, like the yogurt company.
Oh, I was like, dude, I don't know what that is.
I like their flips.
Yeah. Oh, cool. But again, she makes all these endorsements. She's one of the most recognized women's soccer players in the world.
Yeah.
Like,
she's arguably right now the best player in the world, the best women's player in the world.
She was on a FIFA cover.
So again, like if you're all about equal opportunity, Servando, you know, that's like good for him and for women's soccer and the whole.
Hey, you know who it's good for? The both of them, because these two kids, they really like one another.
Yeah, and I'm just joking about the Mr. Alex Morgan thing before someone like flips their lid and tries to sue us for being
slander
dicks. That's kind of what we're here for. I mean, if you've listened before, that's not
even
close to the worst thing
we've said. If you're just coming in at this point, hi.
Brent's mom, I'm really sorry. I think I might have crossed the line there. Please forgive me. But no, I would rather have had him come in and play than Nocerino with Higuita being out.
Who?
I would have rather had Servando Carrasco in than.
And he did, but he came in the 90th minute.
Right.
He had an impact in the game. We'll get to that in just a second.
Oh, yes, he did.
So Antonio Nocerino had a chance, tipped over the bar by Bobby Shuttleworth. Then ensuing corner kick goes around a bit. Kevin Molino gets a chance, tipped over by Bobby Shuttleworth. A few little possessions here and there later. Throw into the box, gets bounced around, finally falls to Kevin Molino, who chests it down, and I put chest in air quote because I'll get to that, and he gets it on his left foot and scores a goal. Apparently, and this is, I'm saying apparently, but it happened. It was a handball in the box by Molino to kind of push the ball away from the defender to create space for himself to get the goal, which put Orlando up 2-1 in the 92nd minute, with 3 minutes of added time on. So,
Should be noted that, you know, it's kind of hard to tell if whether he did or not. I mean, the ball kind of moves in that direction, but
there's some camera angles that show it
that
hitting
show
his arm. Yeah,
not just kind of like a blurry kind of.
No,
moving,
no, no. There's a camera angle behind Molino where it shows his arm and only his arm, not the defender.
Oh, okay.
So, but again.
Because I've only seen that one angle, and from there it's kind of
blurry.
Back and to the left,
right?
Back and to the left. You know,
it really is hard. On the replay that ESPN showed, they had different camera angles, and one was behind Molino that showed him clearly knocking the ball
with
his arm. Anyways, controversy there. So that's third goal with controversy. Not even a minute later, Lee Wynn gets the ball at the edge of the 18-yard box. Servando Carrasco defending him. Lee Wynn tries to get across into the box. It hits off of Carrasco. Baldomero Toledo, the referee, calls a handball. Calls it outside the box. The replay shows that clearly Carrasco was inside the box when the ball was hit off of his person. So Baldomero Toledo confers with his fourth official in his ear, changes it to a penalty. Here's the issue with that. It wasn't a penalty. It wasn't a handball.
Touched his shoulder.
Yeah. Like, there was really no way. Like, his arm was behind his back.
Yeah, and there's a really good picture that shows Baldy kind of just looking directly at the angle of where it would have hit on Servando Carrasco. And I don't understand how or why you look, without really knowing what conversation went on between the refs and who decided to award a penalty there, it's kind of amazing that was the ultimate result and ultimately costed Orlando 2 points out of that match.
Very true. But again, Lee Wynn finishes off the penalty. Orlando fans get a bit upset, start throwing things on the field. Teal Bunbury then goes to the Orlando fans and says, hey, keep throwing it, and then kind of eggs them on, and they continue to do stuff.
Which let me just take a minute to say that is absolutely fucking stupid.
That's the dumbest.
Anybody who threw anything, because here's the thing. Every single person that threw something, I can guarantee you at some point in their life, they've bitched about it on Facebook when another team's fans have thrown something, and they've said that's horrible, you shouldn't do that, you're a horrible fan, etc., etc., just a lot more colorful than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then here they are because they're pissed and they're throwing crap, and it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't care who it was. I don't care. It's unacceptable, and it should never be done. And I guarantee you some of the people that threw it are the same people that complain when other fans throw stuff.
So now here's two things from that incident. First, it was on the north side of the field, away, so the complete opposite side from the supporter section.
Yeah, no, I'm not blaming. I'm not blaming
the
supporters.
That wasn't us saying anything.
No,
about
no, no,
supporters.
No. I'm just clarifying. But it was on the opposite side of the field. Also, after the game, Jay Heaps, the New England coach, Adrian Heath, the Orlando coach, got into it
had some
a little
words.
Bit.
That
apparently,
was great.
Apparently, Heaps said that he was upset that he couldn't control the Orlando fans, which
that's
is kind of like
fine. Okay.
Yeah,
that's a weird thing to be upset about.
Yeah, he was basically saying like, you know, I was arguing with him about the safety of my players, and Adrian Heath can't really control that. He has no control over what stupid people do.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a silly argument. Then the players and the coaches got into it, and it was just a mess. And everyone cleared the field. Pretty sure Stuart Kerr kicked a sideboard in frustration, the goalkeeper coach for Orlando. Joe Bendick ripped off his jersey and you know, was upset. Breck Shea in the locker room was sitting in a locker with his knees up to his chest and looking really sad. Like, he was just, like, you know, like, in a locker.
Yeah.
Like, fully in the locker.
Crouched in a locker.
Yeah. He was just looking really sad. And
it's actually kind of sad to think about.
It really is.
It's a little depressing.
Like, the entire
like I'm kind of sad about that right now. Just imagining Breck Shea and his weirdness, just kind of all curled up in a fetal position, just crying.
I know, and
not crying, but just being
looking,
upset.
Yeah, yeah,
like forlorn.
As the media was walking in, he was just like there, and like I caught eyes with him, and he's just like.
He had his knowing glance.
It just looked like, it's just like he was saying, like, why did this happen?
Why Austin? Why?
It's all your fault, Austin.
Why? Why they do this?
Why you do this? But again, Orlando, disappointing result for the second week in a row. Last week against Philadelphia, controversy on the free kick that was taken because the wall was obstructing Joe Bendick's view. People are upset about Joe Bendick for not doing things that he could possibly have not done, like stamping that free kick, which he couldn't see.
Great.
They are also upset that he, during the game on Sunday, that he wasn't distributing the ball as well as he should be, and that he let in two goals.
That's a straw man argument if I ever heard one.
Yeah. But they're saying that Bendick's terrible and that we need Tally Hall back.
And that's where it is. It has
exactly
nothing to do with Joe Bendick.
It has everything
to do with Tally Hall. Look, Tally Hall did well for us last year. Tally Hall made significantly worse mistakes than the very, very incredibly few, if any, glaring mistakes Joe Bendick has made so far this season. Tally Hall made a lot of mistakes. And you know what? We sat here fairly all season last year saying, well, look, the defense is playing really poorly. And we were fair to say that.
Yep.
The defense is not playing poorly, but they've slipped up a few times this season, and it's led to goals. But now, all of a sudden, we can't blame the defenders when they make a mistake. We have to blame the goalkeeper because someone didn't mark their man and left him open in front of goal for a shot. And it's absolutely ridiculous that we're sitting here blaming this guy simply because he's not
Tally Hall.
Tally Hall. I'm at the point now where, after watching him play for the first part of the season, I think he's better. He's younger. He's healthier.
So a lot of the saves that Bendick has made this year are easily, like, you can make a mixtape of them alone and just submit them to the MLS, like, hey, here's your saves of the year.
It's true.
Like,
he stopped a penalty. He stopped one out of the two penalties he's faced. No, one of three. One of three
one
penalties.
One of three, but it's even still, I have no complaints about Joe Bendick this year.
None for me whatsoever, and I'm sure if Brent was here, he'd go off about how people hate the Orlando goalkeeper as long as it's not Tally Hall. And it's the hardest job in Orlando right now. Because even if you make incredible saves and everything, you're still not Tally Hall. And you're still not going to have that same level of respect and trust from the fans until Orlando pulls out like a playoff victory or something really big simply because of Joe Bendick. They had that one in New York earlier on, but I think he needs to do that more often. And sadly to say, you don't want to put him in that situation, but Orlando fans, I don't know what to say about them. They're very hard to please.
It's you know, they're very fickle, and unless it's exactly what they're looking for, it's not what they want.
Right.
And unless Joe Bendick goes to the courthouse and legally changes his name.
And receives plastic surgery.
Receives plastic surgery.
And changes his entire personality.
Changes his personality, regresses a little bit in skill, somehow ages himself.
And like busts his knee in the offseason. Yeah. And then repairs it.
So basically, if he does everything we absolutely do not want the future of our goalkeeping to do,
then
he'd have to do in order for people to
we'll
like
be happy.
No, they probably won't be happy because it's still Joe Bendick hiding under a Tally Hall mask, and they're like, I don't know. Let's just forget it and move on. Because
did we say Tally Hall's name 3 times in that segment?
Yes, we did.
Tally Hall, Tally Hall, Tally Hall. Hey, look, he passed by the window. Austin looked. I just wanted to let everyone know in the studio, Austin looked out the window.
I was kind of curious if someone actually passed by the window. No one did. Could have been a ghost.
The ghost of Tally Hall. The ghost of Tally Hall's knee.
It's just cartilage flying by.
It's actually the ghost of Martin Patterson.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't know. I think he may have, like, passed on to further terrible things in his career.
Or other players'
I think he's
lives.
In, like, the fifth division or something. Anyway, let's move on. Look ahead to the New York game. This is not NYCFC, mind you. This is the New York Red Bulls, currently sitting at the dead last bottom of the table in the Eastern Conference. 1-6-0. So that's 1 win, 6 losses, 0 draws.
Ha!
-10 goal differential.
Ha!
Aren't they the reigning Supporters' Shield?
They are indeed. Minus Matt Miazga. So their entire defense, they're lacking a quality center back. They have one, but they need two.
Okay.
So that's why they're 0-4-0 away from home and 1-2-0 at home. Which, I mean, that's good for Orlando because despite only winning 2 games, 3 draws, and 1 loss, they still have the most goals in the Eastern Conference with 11. Just throwing that out there. Only Montreal Impact are close with double digits with 10. Currently second in goal differential now with 3. So 11, 4, 8 against. Meanwhile, Montreal's 10, 4, and 6 against for 4. So that's not too bad, but it's hard to not predict a win for Orlando
New York. There's only 5 teams in MLS right now that have only 1 loss or better, which Real Salt Lake's the only undefeated team. But there's only 5 teams still to only have 1 loss in the league, including Real Salt Lake, who have none, and Orlando is one of those teams. So at this point, it's looking very much like everyone's thinking Orlando's playing how they should be.
Now, if they play like the first half the entire game, like the first half of the most recent game against New England, then it may be a struggle. If they play like they did in the second half against New England, then Orlando City should come away with decent amount of points.
But I think with Molino and Laren returning to the lineup and possibly hitting the starting lineup, they should be in much better shape than they were.
Also, Higuita. He's been a big miss for the last 2 weeks.
Higuita's absence is very much missed. His distribution and possession in the midfield are pretty much essential for Orlando City to keep getting results.
I mean, yeah. The difference between him and Notarino is kind of like night and day.
Oh, God.
Notarino just doesn't have the ball hawk. Yeah, he doesn't have that ball hawk mentality, the one who wants to dive for balls and put himself on the line in order to win the ball back.
Unless it's right on his feet. He does not know what to do with it.
Even then, if the ball is right next to him and the guy's like standing in front of him, he'll just kind of like take a stab at it and then get blown by, and he'll be like, "Oh, I tried. Oh well."
He's like, "Well, Carl likes me, so I can do whatever, and they're gonna put me on the field."
Well, I don't know. Also, Rafael Ramos, we neglected to mention him. He missed this past game.
He got
game.
Benched.
They called it a hamstring injury.
He got benched.
Kevin Alston played.
He can get benched to OCB for all I care.
Hmm. To be fair, I saw him after the game. He looked fine.
Yeah.
He didn't have any like bandages or wraps or cold compress or anything. He was just kind of dressed in his like...
"No, Rafa, your hamstring hurts. Sit down."
"Rafa, damn it, you're injured."
"But, coach..."
"Sit down. You are not playing. You are hurt. Coach, I'm fine." "You are hurt." "Whoa." Except, and she sounds a lot differently than
Anthony,
that,
go over there and kick Rafa.
"But what will my girlfriend say?"
"Julio, kick him as hard in the leg as you can. Dead leg the shit out of him."
I'm pretty sure that Julio doesn't speak English, by the way.
Okay, well, he'll say it in Spanish.
He'll get
or Portuguese, or whatever he speaks.
He'll get any number of he Brazilian players Spanish. On this team to go tell him to do that.
There's three now?
Right, but...
Ribeiro, Kaká, and Baptista, as well as Ramos, who's from Portugal.
Right, but there's also a lot of people around the club who can speak Portuguese.
Yeah, and Baptista speaks Spanish as well.
Do you know who can speak Portuguese?
Carneiro. Estrella.
Flavio.
Oh. I mean, you know, I could have guessed a number of
team
people.
Owner.
Yeah. Okay.
Jeez, I mean, throw like a handful of names. And
yeah, it wasn't really meant to be a... just kind of give it a fact there.
Cool.
Nothing too hard.
All right. Let's move on from MLS stuff and talk about the other team that Orlando has now.
OCB. No.
Yeah, wait. We're not going to talk about OCB as long as they keep losing and playing terrible.
They're never
and Luis Neal getting into fisticuffs.
It was a Donnybrook. He tore a guy's shirt off.
He did apologize on Twitter. He also sent a picture of his leg. Did not look good. Some guy stepped on him. He took exception to that, which is fair. But you know that it's tough losing games, all the time, especially with they're coming off a 4-1 drubbing against Louisville City. It's tough. Moving on. Orlando
What's
Pride.
What's going on at this club? You've taken the pride out of it,
Flavio.
Oh, shots.
Moving
fired.
On to the Orlando Pride. They played their first ever game officially in NWSL up in Portland against the Thorns in front of 15,000 people. And this was during a Portland Trailblazers playoff game against the Los Angeles Clippers, whom they lost by
Mob City.
A decent margin. But
yeah,
again,
they did.
15,000 people to see a women's soccer match in Portland, one of the more popular spots to watch women's soccer.
Thorns have a lot of NWSL attendance records. They're really well supported up in Portland. Portland's a really good soccer town. It's really no wonder that they were one of the sort of cornerstones of getting that league put in place.
Yep. And seeing a new team with Alex Morgan and the Pride. A lot of former Portland players on the Pride, too.
Yep. Yeah, Alex Morgan, Kaylin Kyle.
I think Leanne Sanderson as well.
She might have made a stop there at one point.
Yeah. But again... first game for Orlando Pride, first ever inaugural game. They'll be opening up at home this coming Saturday at 7:30 against the Houston Dash. We'll get into that.
Carly Lloyd,
big name right there.
You're gonna have two of the biggest names in women's soccer in Orlando come next weekend.
Yeah, Alex Morgan. I think she won Player of the Year at one point, did she not?
I do not believe so. Hold on.
I know Carly Lloyd just recently won Player of the Year.
Well, because you got to remember, Abby won a lot of that award.
Yeah, so. No, I know. There was one season where Morgan just like completely torched the competition. Like 2013, maybe.
She's won U.S. Soccer Athlete of the Year, but she isn't not from FIFA. No.
Interesting. Okay.
CONCACAF Player of the Year 2013 USSF. Soccer All Selection.
Yeah, no, it was 2012 Abby Wambach, and then two Germans with Ungerer and Kiesler. past 2 years. Okay.
Yeah, she hasn't won a Ballon d'Or yet.
All right. Well, one day.
Yet.
But again, 2-1 was the final. Portland came out with a very easy game-winning goal. Kind of got the Pride defense.
Defense was kind of screwed up there for a minute in the box. And
it only takes one instance as well.
You know, they played like a team that had been together for about 5 weeks. And, you know, the Thorns have, you know, they've had a lot of time together. I mean, there are some new additions in there. Horan is just, she's just a monster. She's gonna soak up so many goals this year, and it's gonna be kind of ridiculous to watch her do her thing. But at the same time, I really do feel Alex Morgan's, you know, she's finding her form. She's already matched her goal total from last year, although granted she was hurt, you know, for a good chunk of it, including the World Cup. The Pride have some players who played together internationally, but not at the club level, so it should be sort of a feeling out process still that some of them have to work out with one another and sort of get that sort of team cohesion together.
Absolutely. Although Orlando, like I said, 2-1 was the final. So Orlando did score the very first goal of the match. Who was it again? Steph Catley, one of the Australians.
Yep.
Scored the very first goal off a free kick. So it just seems that Orlando and free kicks in inaugural games go hand in hand. How about that?
I mean, the Pride's big problem is they're going to be losing a lot of players to, you know, the Olympics and everything else that's coming up here soon. So, you know, just trying to get the most minutes you can out of those players and try to get some leeway first and, you know, try to save up some legs for down the stretch. So, you know, it was interesting to see, you know, Laura Alloway and Steph Catley out there as long as they were, honestly, you know, because they're definitely two that are going to be going to Australia. Sarah Hagen probably isn't going to be called up. Bellinger, she's definitely going to go.
Leanne Sanderson's going to go for England.
Is she?
She did recently. Did she not? Call it 50-50.
She played in like a FIFA World Cup qualifier, but I don't know if she's gonna go or not.
Okay.
I don't think England's released their rosters for the Olympics yet, but maybe.
Fair. All right. Let's look ahead to this coming weekend. Pride play against the Houston Dash. Like we said, Carly Lloyd. It's gonna be a great atmosphere, trying to sell out the lower bowl of the Citrus Bowl. 30,000, I think, was their goal. I think they're on pace for that.
Filled with pride. More. Filled with pride.
Are you filled with pride, Brad?
I am. I'm a season ticket holder.
I'm filled with something else right now. Four Rivers. Come on, Kyle.
Four Rivers is great.
It is great. But let's look ahead to the... We're done with Orlando now. We're going to look ahead to MLS in just a bit. But first, I want to talk about the English Premier League, because the race for first place is getting a bit more interesting. Leicester came off a very dramatic draw in which Jamie Vardy was sent off. But somehow Leicester City pulled it back. And then Tottenham today, just a few hours ago when we're recording this on Monday, came out and thrashed Stoke City, the English sister club of Orlando. 4-0 was the final.
Great soccer weekend here in Orlando.
Honestly. But the standings right now, Leicester's sitting at 73, Tottenham at 68. That's pretty much the only race at this point. You have Man City at 60.
Man City and Arsenal both at 60.
Both at 60. And then Arsenal, Manchester United.
Man U at 56, yep.
And then right behind them is West Ham at 53.
So we could live in a world, theoretically, without Manchester United or Chelsea playing soccer in Europe.
Yeah.
Next year.
And then Leicester and Arsenal instead. And Tottenham.
Well, Arsenal's been playing Champions League for a long time. But seeing Leicester and Tottenham play it on a regular basis is new.
It is indeed. Potentially... If Arsenal, Manchester United, and West Ham continue, like, just start losing all of a sudden, Southampton could make a run for that last Champions League spot, which is
weird. I mean, they're 9 points out at this point. It's kind of,
if they win three out of their next
four.
Yeah. And then everyone else loses.
Drops. It could.
Crazier things have happened.
It could happen.
Yeah.
Sure.
Hell, even Liverpool's at 51. They could even somehow miraculously make a run. Nope. Not going to happen. Oh, well.
I'm just sad Chelsea didn't get relegated this year.
Hey, now.
Dude, I'm distraught that that didn't happen.
It wasn't going to happen.
Could you imagine a world? Well, let's imagine this for 1 second here. Chelsea win the Champions League, but do so bad in the Premier League that they get relegated. You could have a team in the Championship playing in the Champions League.
Well, I mean, couldn't they? It's the same as if a team like won the FA Cup.
But you get teams from the Championship winning it sometimes. Like, you'll get like once a decade, someone will do that. But someone playing in a second division in English football win the Champions League, that would be kind of insane.
I think it wouldn't be so much because of Chelsea. I think what's going to be perfect is next year when Leicester City runs the table in the Champions League.
Now, the only question is, would they be able to maintain and keep all their talent?
That's the thing, because is Leicester deep enough at all their positions that they're going to have?
They're not deep, but I don't think they're going to lose a lot of people. And because of the new TV deals in England, they're going to have enough money, to bring in a few extra players to add some depth.
Winning the whole thing would give them a lot of money.
Please don't tell me this thing is going to be 1 year, because I will tell you, you are a liar. And you should go back to Whore Island.
I mean, crazier. I mean, you know, is calling Leicester City the British equivalent of the Warriors? Is that like a fair thing to say?
Because
like the Warriors are another team that sort of like came out of nowhere, and you know, they made some playoff runs, you know, in the early 2010s, but it just wasn't really clicking for them under Mark Jackson. But is Leicester that team too?
Debatably. Yeah, that's a relative. It's the best comparison I've seen because they're a team where they've been together for a few years.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, Jamie Vardy would obviously be, you know, the Steph Curry of that team.
Yeah, God, Jamie Vardy and Steph Curry.
Is Vardy going to be suspended for the next match?
He's definitely out for the next match. And he actually is facing more discipline and maybe out for an additional
the Man
match.
U match, which...
I mean, they're only 5 points ahead, aren't they?
They're only 5 points ahead.
Drop two results without Jamie Vardy.
Suddenly you're not.
They're not going to be United. I'm a United fan, I will say. We barely beat Aston Villa, who had 16 points in like 34 games this last week.
Fair.
So I don't think we can beat even like a half-strength Leicester City.
Well, we'll see. We'll pick a few of those EPL games. Actually, I think we only have one No, we don't have any. We have an FA Cup semifinal game on the docket. So we won't pick any this week, and we'll come back next week and maybe pick a few as it starts to wrap up. But let's go into MLS stuff really quick. Some really weird score lines across MLS. First off, Houston Galaxy, who have the most goals in MLS right now, got thrashed at home by the LA Galaxy.
You say Houston Galaxy?
Houston Dynamo. I said the Galaxy because I was reading Houston and Galaxy on the page at the same time. Houston Dynamo, who have the most goals in MLS currently, got thrashed at home by the LA Galaxy. 4-1 was the final. Kind of a surprising result. All things considered, Giovanni Dos Santos scored two and assisted on one. And now LA has the most goal. I think they have the biggest goal differential in MLS now after that. Toronto FC pulled a result over DC United, just barely. Montreal beat Chicago thanks to Didier Drogba's return, as well as Nacho Piatti, who scored a wonder goal from outside the box, just curled it into the back of the net.
He's Nacho average player.
Woo. Well done.
Thank you.
Columbus finally got a win, beating NYCFC. So the two teams that most Orlando City fans hate went head-to-head, and Columbus beat NYCFC. So are you happy or sad about that?
I'm indifferent. I don't care about those
teams. Yeah, that's a meteor game for me.
I mean, Columbus is farther down the table, but NYCFC is
Columbus is just mid to low level talent. That's all they ever have been. It's all they ever will be. Next.
But it's nice that NYCFC didn't win, because that would have meant they would have tied us on points. So
it works out.
You know, that's the result you want, I guess.
Go Columbus. Just kidding. Toronto beat the New York Red Bulls, Orlando's next opponent. Colorado. Who saw that coming?
Well, I mean, we were all clowning on Colorado before the season started.
We sure were.
I mean,
who saw any? I mean,
third.
So
right
far,
now.
What we've seen this season has been extremely lopsided.
Three wins at home, no losses, and 1-2-1 away.
If you closed your eyes, if you closed your eyes and just threw darts at the table right now, I think you'd be about right. Because I mean, it's only your FC Dallas has played 8 games. That's the most of the league so far. Yep. So I mean. Not exactly too early yet, but at the same time.
And you look at the Eastern and Western conferences and the point differential between both teams and both leagues. I mean, FC Dallas currently leads everything with 17 points, but 8 games played. Meanwhile, Montreal have 6 games played and have 12 points.
Yep. That's, I mean...
There's actually been a lot more games played in the West than the East as of right now. A lot of the teams have 7 games played, where only 3 East teams have 6, or have 7. Everyone else has 6.
New England and DC and New York Red Bulls.
Yeah. And ooh. They're all kind of towards the bottom of the table, too.
Yeah, that should actually... That result should be the opposite way, so... Looking at it another way, if you were to flip the table completely upside down, it would probably make more sense.
Honestly, yeah.
Because then you'd have New York and Houston on top.
Yeah.
Which I guess having Houston on top doesn't actually really make a lot of sense, but...
Yeah, 13 goals for the Houston Dynamo, but...
Only 1 win.
Yeah, so bottom of the table. That's crazy. All right. Other games that we didn't talk about... Seattle beat Philly 2-1. Jordan Morris finally got his first club goal.
Finally, the Seattle Messi scored a goal.
Not Messi.
To be confused with the American Messi, Christian Pulisic, who also scored a goal this weekend.
Or the Canadian Messi, Kyle Larin.
I don't care about Canada, but nice try.
But Kyle Larin.
Yeah, he's Canadian Messi. I get it.
Move on.
Real Salt Lake beat Vancouver 1-0 to continue their unbeaten streak. João Plata coming up huge. I mean, everyone knew he was good, but he's been influential in every single game that Real Salt Lake have played. And Burrito Martinez has been amazing. His technical ability on the ball is fun to watch. And tag, I mean... If they could keep this going, that'd be a kind of a shock of the season. Portland, 3-1 over San Jose. Fernando Adi scored 2, coming off the bench. Obviously, we talked about the Orlando-New England result, and then FC Dallas pulled one out against Sporting KC. And that's all we got from last week. Let's go over a few little bits and pieces here. In the Columbus game, there was a weird situation where Michael Parkhurst was red carded. Here's the issue with that. He didn't make a tackle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Pro went back and looked at it and reassessed their red card.
Looking at the replay, Michael Parkhurst was right out at the edge of the 18-yard box. Meanwhile, Tyson Wall, who ended up making the tackle... basically was about 5 feet in front of him making the tackle. The referee was directly behind Parkhurst and Wall, saw it plain as day, and then gave Parkhurst the red card. But they went back and corrected themselves. It's just kind of funny how they got wrong.
This was a banner weekend for Pro.
Honestly. And you look at the replay, the referee's right there, like, you can't miss that.
I mean, I just...
Because the numbers are facing backwards, which is where the ref is.
Right. Earlier last week, I went and read a thing on Vice about how pro referees are trying to meet together, and they're trying to be more comprehensive about their calls and trying to school each other and how to look at them, and how there's actually fewer refs now in MLS because they're trying to be better about, you know, their calls and everything. But then you have a weekend like this, and it's just like, what are you guys actually doing when you talk about there? Are you guys, you know, talking about matches around the world, or are you just talking about ones that you did? Because it doesn't help you to only look at the ones that you did, but rather if you look at the ones from around the world and you see how they're making calls and you see how they're doing it and you get ideas about how you can be better based off of everyone else who's doing it, then it really works. Because if you're just looking at yourself, you're not really learning anything.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, and by the way, the referee was Mark Geiger.
Go figure.
Yep. Kind of funny.
Yep.
Anyways,
Geiger counter.
Geiger counter, indeed. Wonder what he's at. Other random MLS news. Atlanta United's got a nice-looking training ground, in theory. They got their plans out. It looks really nice. Plans for $60 million, 30,000-square-foot building. Three natural grass, three synthetic turf fields, 32 acres, including the Cub headquarters. And that's going to be in Marietta in Georgia, and hopefully done by April 2017. It looks really nice. You know, they've got like little like classrooms and locker rooms. And I mean, geez, it's very impressive. It'll give teams a run for their money and definitely be like kind of a selling point for other players saying, hey, look, we got all this nice stuff here. Fancy new training ground, fancy new stadium. Come play for us.
For those who aren't really aware with the Atlanta sort of layout, that's sort of like to the northwest of Atlanta, sort of between Atlanta and Kennesaw, basically. So you get like Cobb County area out in there. So again, it makes sense because that's where a lot of the Atlanta teams are sort of shifting to. The Braves are moving out there. So building a facility out there where you know you're going to have a sort of athletic presence there, logistically and civic planning wise, makes sense.
Yep. All right. Other soccer news, possible MLS news. FC Cincinnati, one of the new USL teams, sold out their stadium more or less. They set a USL attendance record, which was first by Orlando City, then by Sacramento Republic, and now FC Cincinnati. So it's just kind of continuing on and on. 20,497 was the official tickets sold number. Lost to Louisville City, however, but still
support, and you know,
this is a brand new
team. As far as you know, exhibition or expansion goes, seeing that their support, and it's a, like Austin said, it's a brand new team. You know, that goes a long way as showing, like, you know, MLS, like who, when they're planning who's going to join next, goes a long way.
And here's the fun thing. The Cincinnati president, Jeff Bearding, he said he has MLS ambitions, and he told website, SoapboxMedia.com, he was going to follow Orlando City's USL to MLS road.
And I think that
they've set the...
It's definitely the mold for how teams go from, you know, growing from USL to MLS, which is interesting because technically USL is supposed to be the third division, but whatever.
Yeah, NASL just kind of exists out there in their own space. It's almost, I mean, USL is owned by MLS now. So it's almost like if MLS wants a franchise somewhere, they give them a USL franchise, test the market, give them a few years, and then just say, hey, come on up.
Which, sounds cool, but
I prefer that over the farm teams that teams are created.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't like the farm teams. I think if you know, because first of all, these farm teams can't compete in the U.S. Open Cup, which...
Kind of a bummer,
exactly.
At this point, basically, the majority of the league can't even compete in the Open Cup.
But if you have a PDL team still that's operated by your club, it can't compete in the U.S. Open Cup because they're amateurs.
Yeah, it's a really weird situation. So just looking at the teams in general, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in the Western Conference that can compete in the U.S. Open. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in the East.
Out of how many in the conferences?
Isn't there like 30 teams in USL?
Something like that.
So half of them can compete.
Yeah, half the league can compete in the U.S. Open Cup. The other half can't.
It's kind of
because
crazy.
They're owned by MLS teams.
Yep.
Awesome.
Although the nice thing about USL is that there's teams pretty much everywhere except for the just dead up north where like North and South Dakota and Michigan is.
Yeah, Minnesota United.
So you've got it's kind of like a big giant like
they're NASL, aren't they?
Who?
Minnesota United.
Yes.
Okay.
And they'll be in MLS soon.
Yeah. Soon.
Very soon. Still, it looks it is what it is for now. We shall see how it goes with MLS expansion teams, and we'll kind of keep our eyes on that. But that's all I got for MLS.
The growth of MLS is going to help the growth of USL because of what it's going to do is it's going to drive interest into those local clubs. People are going to see MLS clubs on TV, but then they're going to go, "How can I watch this? You know, near me?" And then they're going to see USL, and they're going to seek that out.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, there's a new expansion team coming from Reno, Nevada. It's called Reno 1868 FC.
What's the significance of 1868? Was that like when Nevada was admitted to the Union or something?
I have no idea.
Everyone's Googling like Nevada 1868.
Yeah. It's a really weird name. Like, why would you name it after a date?
Its admission to the Union is 1864. Reno's founding, maybe?
We're all like pausing to look this up.
Yeah,
now.
this is riveting. Riveting radio here.
All right. While we're looking that up, I think we'll just move on.
Yeah, 1868 was when the city of Reno was founded.
Okay, that makes sense. We're gonna move on to our weird news stories of the week. Kyle, we'll start with you. No politics, but go ahead.
Oh. Well, I won't get political with this, but a Los Angeles artist named Ilmagor painted a picture of Donald Trump in the nude. That was, shall we say, unflattering to the size of his manhood.
But I thought he cleared all that up.
That is the quote from this piece.
Before a presidential debate, as one does.
Well, this is titled. It was actually during a debate that he said that. Trust me, there's no issues there.
Because that's presidential.
I'll refrain from politics, although I will say, just for the record, I cannot stand him in any way, and I'm pretty sure we all agree there. So, the article title is, Donald Trump threatens to sue artists for painting him with a small penis. So, Donald Trump is, as it says, pathologically insecure about everything, most especially the size of his manhood.
So it's literally like that episode of Simpsons where Marge paints Mr. Burns?
Basically.
Wow, wait. Huh. Parallels.
Donald Trump is Mr. Burns?
Ooh, this was painted in February before he felt the need to publicly defend the size of his manhood. The legal team has threatened a lawsuit.
Per the usual.
Somebody wrote the statement for the artists. I'm not sure if... Oh, no, this was written by the artist. She wrote, because no matter what is in your pants, you can still be a big prick.
And really, at the end of the day, isn't that the real message?
This is just, I mean, this is great. Look, and I don't want to look up a picture of the painting. I'm sure you can Google it.
Nope. Not going to do that.
Nope.
We'll take your word for
somebody
it.
Somebody drew Donald Trump with a tiny penis. He's threatening to sue them.
He always threatens to sue everybody. He never does it.
No.
Let's just move on.
Make America stop painting tiny penises.
Again.
I didn't know we ever started.
Nah, we've been doing that.
I mean, look, I'm not even going to go there. I'm actually going to stop. I'm going to stop while I'm ahead.
Brad, what's your weird news?
So my weird news doesn't have any tiny penises in it, but it does have bananas.
So larger penises.
As the Tennessee Titans hosted a movie night in which fans could hang out on the field, watch the movie Minions, Banana, on the stadium's video board and got drenched because they forgot to turn the sprinklers off.
Nice.
Yep. You're basically what happens when a neighborhood dad has a block party is what happened when the Tennessee Titans, a professional football team, decided to host their season ticket holders over and have a cool night, but it just ended up kind of annoying a lot of people. Tennessee Titans football in a nutshell.
Catch the cold. Catch the fever. Catch the fever.
Catch the not irrigated, non-potable water that...
that's a really long for a catchphrase.
Yeah, right. Well, it's there. You know, it's Tennessee. Who cares?
Good that's point. Accurate.
Good point. All right. We're going to move on to my really weird news story. This was in New Zealand, first off. Two New Zealanders have celebrated the first legally recognized Pastafarian marriage on board a pirate ship in recognition of their bizarre global religion. So their religion is the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. This is a real thing. Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, whose slated beliefs are in a god made of spaghetti. And apparently there's followers around the world.
Have you been touched by his noodly appendage?
Oh my god. And there's the vows that they took. It's like a... let me just read it. Does ye take this feisty wench to be ye lawfully wedded best mate? Does ye promise to stay at the helm even when seas are rough? And apparently the pastor in this case is called a minestrone.
That is excellent. Look, I'm not going to... Look, if that's people's thing, that's...
Hey, that's
do it
their,
to it. Do it
their,
to it.
Their closely regarded beliefs, and you know what, their customs, and
if they are happy, you know. Then that's awesome, and I am happy for them. However, I am laughing my ass off at this because they are Pastafarians, which I find hysterical.
Pastafari.
And look, I'm sorry if there are Pastafarians listening. I just think it's great, and I'm not laughing in a condescending way. I'm laughing in that's great. You believe in a flying spaghetti monster. That actually really is. Pretty cool. I mean, I personally kind of worship the sweet meteor of death, who's coming soon to destroy us all.
It's a meatball.
Oh my god!
The heat, death of the universe means that none of this means anything anyway.
Look, equality for all. We're all gonna die equally.
Yeah,
that's how. That's how we spend
giant meatball.
Yeah,
you came in this world equally. You're gonna go out of it equally too.
No, look, I hope they had a great time. I hope it was tons of fun because now the internet's gonna talk about it forever.
Good old Pastafarians. All right. Speaking of meatballs, we're going to go on to What's Our Beef?
Cannonball!
Brad, we'll start with you. What's your beef?
You know, I'm approaching things from a more tranquil place this week after having some food poisoning over the last week. That's why I wasn't here on the fourth official podcast last week. That was my first actual absence since joining the show.
Well, you can have a beef with whatever
that's,
you had.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Austin, okay. God damn, now my beef is with you.
Aw.
My beef is always
heard,
with Austin,
to
be
my
fair.
Bit.
Well, actually, well, Gavin's not here, so okay, whatever. Or Brent. They always usually take the onus off me. Anyway, Kyle.
Ah, my beef is with pro referees and this damn cough that I can't get rid of. But my beef is with pro referees. They are a sad excuse for a referee organization. Their mothers looked at them when they were born and said, what the hell is wrong with you? We're going to send you out to referee school in the Himalayas. And so they were raised in the Himalayas. Mark Geiger's been alive for 3,000 years. Again, let me preface, this is in the Himalayas, in the Himalayan mountains. They were being trained by Sherpas that speak no English, only in tribal grunting. And that is how they learned to referee. Their IQs never reached a level higher than 6, also never lower than 2, so they're somewhere between 3 and 6, okay? And every single one of them, when they were a small child, had a puppy bought for them. It was purchased for them. And the monks and the Sherpas watched the puppy grow, and they grunted out instructions on how to nurture the puppy. And then one day, the monks brutally murdered all of the puppies in front of these pro referees. And that explains all of their decisions they've made in every season so far. They are just these god-awful decisions because they are still so blinded by sadness and physical blindness, because I forgot to mention living in the Himalayas also made them, of course, physically blind. It's the Helen Keller effect. But they're sitting here and they're so angry and so heartbroken over their puppies that they just cannot make an accurate call. It's unacceptable. I have a beef with them. They are worse than gas station sushi. They are worse than eating stale bread and not knowing it is moldy. They are worse than a plethora of things. They are the worst things. In fact, if I had to choose between pro referees and self-erotic asphyxiation, I would probably choose the referees because I don't want to die, but it would not be an easy decision. I cannot stand pro referees. I don't think I have made that abundantly clear. I hope they go back to the Himalayas. I would rather have the grunting Sherpas as our referees, because they would make a goddamn call and get it correct and not award a penalty when it wasn't deserved and not be such garbage.
Can we all just appreciate the fact how Brad kept a straight face throughout that entire conversation?
No, because I agreed completely with all of it.
He knows it's a true story. I didn't make any of that up.
Okay, well, I'm just the outlier here. Crying my ass off here just from laughter.
How does one cry their ass off?
I don't know. I can't think.
I can. No, you know what? Last week, I could probably answer that for you.
We'll talk after the show. I don't know if people want to hear that.
We feel for you, Brad. We do.
It's fine. I'm fine now.
Okay.
What's all those lines of cocaine we snorted before we started recording here at Rollins College?
I mean, not to speculate or anything, but they do have an issue.
Austin supplied us with all the cocaine. That's what he's saying.
I mean, it could have been any number of students here, to be fair.
But it was,
moving on.
But it was Austin.
Yeah, let's not do that. Moving on. You know, still trying to get a job here. Anyways, moving on. My issue here is with
Cannonball.
My issue here is with the press box for the Citrus Bowl. So apparently, from what I have been told, the media food over at the Citrus Bowl will no longer be. We won't be getting any actual food for the Orlando City games. Instead, we will be getting chips and pretzels. Which isn't cool.
Oh, boo, you get to watch the game for free and get free food.
Put that cookie down now!
Excellent.
Fantastic. All right.
My beef is with you for being ungrateful and making that your beef. Because do you know what they fed me when I went to games and paid to go? Nothing. I had to pay outrageous prices if I wanted to eat.
It's true. I mean, you had the tailgates.
Yeah, but I had to bring food or donate for food.
Yeah.
Or beat the living crap out of that homeless man and take his food. Jesus. I never did that. Nobody can prove it.
To be fair, you probably don't really want to do that.
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
All right. That's our beef. Still trying to get over Kyle's pro rant, which was just excellent. Well done. We're going to move on to our Estrella update. Actually, we're not, because there's nothing to update. Let's go on to our games.
Yes, let's make predictions.
So we've got 7 games to pick from this week. Not as many as last week, but we got some interesting ones. The first one is going to be Millwall against Fleetwood Town. Now, Millwall and Fleetwood Town are both in the, not the second division, but the third division, Football League One. And it's going to be at the Den of Millwall. We'll be singing No One Likes Us.
No one likes us. No one likes us. We don't care. We are Millwall. Super Millwall. We are Millwall from the Den.
So do you take Millwall?
I thought that was implied, but yeah.
Yes, just making sure.
I'm going with Fleetwood Mac. I feel like that's a pop culture reference, and so people are going to appreciate it.
It's Rumors. Rumors is a good album.
It is. I'll go Millwall, just because I went there and bought a scarf. All right, next one is going to be from the La Liga, Real Madrid versus Villarreal. top teams in the league.
Real Madrid.
You say that laughing. Why?
Because it's they're not going to lose. I'm sure of it.
Brad?
It's an interesting... I'm going to say draw. I'm going to say 2-2 draw.
All right. I'll go... I don't know. I did really bad last week. I went 2-8. I'll stay safe and go Real. Just because. By the way, last week, let's go over that really quick. We picked Atletico and Barca for the Champions League. Atletico won 2-0. We picked Bayern and Benfica. They drew 2-2, but Bayern moved on. Still doesn't count for us. We all lose. We picked the MK Dons and Preston North End. They drew 1-1, so no one wins because we all picked a game. We picked Dortmund against Hamburg. Dortmund won 3-0. Pulisic scored, like Kyle predicted, so good job, Kyle. Too bad you don't get any bonus points for that. Jacksonville against Miami FC. Jacksonville won 2-1. We all picked Jacksonville. And we picked FC Tokyo against Kawasaki Frontale. And Kawasaki won. Brent, the only one to pick that, even though he wasn't here. Or no, he was here. Gavin was the one who wasn't here. Never mind. Then we took a flashback to our first episode, Gailing International versus Home United. And they drew 2-2. So no one wins because we all picked different team. Man City against Chelsea. Man City beat the pants off my Blues 3-0. And so Kyle and Gavin got that one. Meanwhile, Brad and I did not. Then the Orlando-New England game. Kyle picked a draw. Good job, Kyle.
Thank you.
So he got that one. And then Dallas and Kansas City. Dallas won 2-1. So I finished 2-8. Gavin 4-6. Kyle 4-6. And Brent 5-5. Not bad. Moving on to our other predictions for this week. So we got Fleetwood Town, Millwall, and then Real Madrid and Villarreal. Now we're going to go to the CONCACAF Champions League final. First leg is going to be starting on Wednesday. So while we're recording this, day after tomorrow. Tigres against Club America. You want to go for the first leg or the entire CONCACAF Champions League you want to pick for?
Let's just pick for the whole thing. I think America's going to win it. Of course, the Mexican America.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah.
Brad?
Let's think here for a second.
I'm going to go Tigres.
Didn't Club America just sign someone not
possibly
too long ago? I wanna say they did.
I honestly have no clue.
I really have no idea.
I can't think of any like big names that have just been signed. I'm looking at their roster right now. They don't really have any like.
I'm looking at their roster.
They got too. Alvarado, who's on the U.S. men's national team. They have.
I guess Club America.
They also have Blanco, who's like 40 something years old.
Yeah, I don't know enough about either of these clubs. So, other than I think Kaylin Kyle's boyfriend plays for Tigres, but I could be wrong too.
Meh. Who you got? Tigres?
Club America. Just because of the name.
Okay. I'll go Tigres. Moving on to Serie A. Juventus versus Lazio. At Juve.
Juve.
Fair.
Juve.
Yeah, I'll go Juve too. All right, next one. Everton versus Man United in the FA Cup semifinal. I know Kyle's going to go Man United.
I have to. They're my team. I can't go against them. Marcus Rashford's going to score.
That'd be nice.
Feeling it.
Brad? This will be at Wembley, by the way. It's a neutral site.
Right. It's FA Cup split there every year.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Everton just to spite Man United, but I can't say that with all my heart. So,
Man United.
Yeah.
Both Man teams United. Have been incredibly disappointing. Yay!
I'll go Everton.
Of course you will.
Yep. Of course I will. All right. Last two games are going to be MLS games. LA Galaxy against the surprise Real Salt Lake, like we talked about earlier. In LA, who you got?
LA.
Galaxy.
And I'll go LA as well. Actually, no. You know what? I'm going to go draw.
Ooh.
Curveball. I have a weird feeling about it. Actually, let me just double check if it is, in fact, in L.A. Because I'm not 100% sure about that. Sure. I don't know. We'll say yes. It is in LA. Last one. And the Red Bulls against Orlando in New York.
Draw.
That's boring.
Well, I was right last week.
Sure you were.
I mean, I was. We just went over this.
Hey, man, I know. Red Bulls got a... You know, they're not that bad, but...
I know, they're just playing bad.
At the same time...
If everyone's healthy for Orlando, that's the question.
Yeah, I mean... I'm going to say Orlando.
And I'll go Orlando as well. All right. That'll do it. After a really weird power outage to start the show, which we didn't mention at all, now we did.
So nobody knows exactly what you're saying.
Nope. Basically, we started recording, the power went out, and then we had to wait half an hour. But we got through it. Congratulations. Claps all around.
The hurricane didn't kill us.
Hurricane did not kill us this time. So, for myself, Austin David, for Kyle Foley, in one of his last appearances.
Yes. Next week will be my final live appearance for the time being.
So for Kyle Foley, for Brad Newton, and for Archerbot, my plan is to crowdsource a plan. We'll see you next time, folks.